Welcome to Hometown Alaska. Good afternoon. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Will Social Security be there for you when you need it? That's the burning question, as proposed new tax bills in Congress would add $1.5 trillion to the national debt and potentially give lawmakers a reason to say they must trim or change Social Security retirement, disability, and Medicare, among others. That's a tough question to answer since everything at this point is still very speculative. But it's more important than ever to know and understand these programs, how financially sound they are, who pays for them, and who benefits from them. Here to background us on Social Security is Kirk Larson. He's on the phone with us from Seattle, Washington. His territory includes Alaska and Washington State. Welcome, Kirk.
Hi, great to be here.
Good to have you. Now, to prepare for today's show, I turned to a lot of the nonprofits and local agencies who work with seniors and the disabled here in Alaska. At the top of this program, I'd like to mention a few and thank them for their help. The Disability Law Center, the Older Persons Action Group, Alaska AARP, the Commission on Aging, and Aging and Disability Resource Center. Those folks are all working on these issues and helping seniors with what they need to do and to know. In addition, at the top of the show, I wanted to mention where the Social Security Administration office is here in Anchorage. It's at 222 West 8th. Room A11. There's a lot of information available to you online and in person at these agencies. To help you find it, we've listed many of them, along with important Social Security resources, on the Alaska Public Media website. So just open alaskapublic.org, select radio, and scroll to Hometown Alaska. We'll be talking about a lot of them on the show today, but you don't have to write them down. You can just go to our website and find them there. In addition, before Kirk and I start talking about Social Security and retirement and disability and Medicare, I just want to let our listeners know that your calls and your concerns are always welcome throughout the show. So if you're in Anchorage, you can give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, it is 1-888-353-5752. And of course, we welcome your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Kirk, let's get started.
All right.
First off, I just want to introduce people to you. I believe you're a 25-year employee at Social Security. You've done just about all the jobs there, and that gives you a unique perspective to sit down and talk with us today. And you represent public affairs, right?
That's correct.
And we decided that we would begin with a quick overview. We're going to get to those tax questions and sustainability questions here in a minute, but you really need to know what Social Security really encompasses. So go ahead and give us the landscape, Kirk.
Perfect. Well, you know, when you normally say Social Security, people think of retirement benefits right off. But it's important to remember that Social Security is a large program. Today in this country, we have about 60 million people that receive Social Security benefits. And that number is actually increasing each and every day. The baby boomers, that generation of about 76 million people, they're currently reaching the age of retirement at the rate of 10,000 each and every day. However, Social Security is much more than just about retirement benefits. Of those 60 million people getting benefits, only about 41 million are getting benefits from our retirement program. The other 19 million people get benefits from our other programs. So we have about 9 million people in this country that receive Social Security disability benefits. Those are people that have worked and paid into the program and qualify for benefits before retirement age due to becoming disabled and unable to work. We also have about 4 million widows and widowers that receive benefits. Those are individuals that have lost a spouse. And rather than drawing benefits under their own Social Security number, they're able to get benefits off their deceased spouse's record. We also have a number of children that get benefits off of an individual's record. So, for example, on our survivor side, we have about 2 million children in this country that receive monthly Social Security benefits off a deceased parent's record. So those are 2 million children that have lost one or both of their parents and are able to get the monies that their parents put aside for them. So Social Security is a very large program. You know, when you're working and paying into the program, you're just not preparing for retirement. You're also creating programs that will protect you in case you become disabled, and will protect your family should something happen to you or you become disabled or you reach retirement age and you're no longer able to work. So that creates the entire Social Security network of programs to protect people.
Okay, and I've got a question for you, Kirk. When we pay our payroll taxes and the employer matches them, are we paying for that whole suite of services, or are we just paying retirement? I think, help me with that.
Yeah, you're correct. When that 6.2% comes out of your paycheck, that's what an individual pays out of their paycheck, and 6.2% is also added in from your employer, that money is distributed to the different programs. So some of it goes into the disability pot, and some of it goes into the retirement survivors pot. And we keep track of that money, and that's how those particular programs are funded. So not all the money goes into retirement. Some of it pays for these other programs.
Mm-hmm. And we talked yesterday about a program that is funded out of the general fund. This is, I guess, SSI, Social Security. What is that? It's aimed at children, right? People who have not been able to work for a living and put aside money.
Exactly. So Social Security administrates two programs. One is called Social Security, and with that, we have retirement benefits, disability benefits, survivors benefits, spouses benefits. Those are programs that people worked and paid into. But we also have another program, a safety net program called SSI, or Supplemental Security Income. And that program pays for individuals that are either disabled or are blind, or have reached the age of 65 and have low income and low resources. So many of those people are children, but they could also be people that have worked in this country but not made a lot of money. And maybe their Social Security benefit is very small, and that's all they have to live on. This program is designed to provide those individuals some support. As a matter of fact, you can qualify for up to $735 from that program. So if you reach the age of retirement, you're 65 years old, let's say, and you have a very small Social Security check, you're only getting, let's say, $500 a month, and that's your only income, and you don't have other resources that you can access, this program could help boost your income up to $735 per month. So it's there as a safety net, and if you're a disabled child and your parents don't have a lot of income and resources, once again, this safety net program can step in and provide some additional monies and Medicaid coverage for you.
Okay, and what the distinction I wanted to make is that is paid for out of the general fund as opposed to the money set aside through payroll taxes that most Americans pay in for their retirement and their disability.
That is correct. So when money comes out of your paycheck, it goes to the Social Security side. The SSI side, our needs-based program based on your income and resources, that program is paid for out of general tax revenues.
Okay. So now, given the headlines we're facing, and I know you and I talked yesterday, Kirk, you can't predict what's going to happen here, but I thought you could inform our audience about what is the financial stability of the Social Security Retirement Fund and the disability funds. And what I didn't know is that we've been in trouble before and come up with some solutions. So first of all, how solvent is Social Security?
Well, actually, today, Social Security is in pretty good shape. Today, Social Security has about $2.9 trillion saved up in the Social Security Trust Fund. And we actually do have that money invested. We own special United States bonds. Just like you can go out and buy a United States savings bond, we've done the same thing. It's a special category of bonds, and we hold about $2.9 trillion in those bonds. And when those bonds mature, we collect back the interest and we collect back the principal, and we use that money to fund the Social Security program. As a matter of fact, we make billions of dollars each year off the interest generated in the Social Security Trust Fund. Now then, as the baby boomers continue to file for benefits, this is going to put a strain on the Social Security system. By the year 2020, we are not going to be bringing in enough money every year from payroll taxes to fully fund the system. And we're going to need to start liquidating that $2.9 trillion. And as more and more baby boomers file, more and more of the trust fund will need to be liquidated until we reach the end of the year 2034. As of the January 1st, 2035, if nothing changes with the way that Social Security does business, the way that we bring money in and the way that we pay money out, we project that by that date, the $2.9 trillion would be gone, and at that point, we would only be able to pay 77% of all of our obligations, meaning everybody that's getting benefits and everybody that would get benefits in the future would need to take about a 23% cut. Now then, that's not a good situation. When you say you can only pay 77 cents on the dollar, that's not good. However, this is our worst-case scenario that we're projecting, and it's a lot better than many politicians, many people in the media will say. Many people will say, you know, Social Security is not going to be there. That's simply not the reality of the situation. Under our worst-case scenario, we will still be able to pay 77% of all of our obligations. The tough solution that comes, though, is how do you make up that 23% shortfall? How do you fix the situation? And that's what we encourage people to understand, is that Social Security does have this problem, this situation out there that we do need to address. Simply doing nothing about it will result in a 23% cut. If we do nothing, that's simply what's going to happen. We encourage people to become involved, understand what the real problem is, not that we're going away, but that we do face this shortfall in the not-too-distant future. And we encourage people to talk to their congressman, their senator, their president, and encourage them to come up with a solution to meet this very important challenge.
Okay, Kirk, that's helpful to get that long-range picture. I do have a question about, you know, the pending tax bills in Congress right now. That would add such a big lump to our debt and perhaps allow lawmakers to think they have to do something quicker, like right now. Could something happen sooner than 2034? Can the rules be changed at any time?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll comment on a few things on that. You know, there's the big tax bill that's before Congress right now. That might have some legislation in it that addresses Social Security, but right now that's just a proposal. You know, it hasn't been fully voted on. It hasn't been brought into law. And there are always proposals that are floating out there before Congress. As a matter of fact, on our website, we have a special section called the Congressional Section. And I encourage people to go there and to educate yourselves. You can actually go there and look at all the different bills and ideas and concepts that congressmen and senators and presidents and organizations have put forward saying, if we do these things, this will help preserve the Social Security system. Number of very interesting ideas out there, number of different ways that you can shore up the Social Security system to remain sound. And as you indicated, this isn't a new situation for Social Security. We've actually seen these problems coming since 1965, when the baby boom went to a baby bust. We knew that there would be a period out there when a very large generation of people would be filing over a relatively short period of time. Now, we addressed some of these problems in the early 80s. As a matter of fact, in the early 80s, Social Security was in a worse situation. It maybe had 1 or 2 years left to go before we would have had to have cut benefits. But at that time, the Congress and the President were able to get together, come up with some solutions, and save the Social Security system and actually create the Social Security Trust Fund. Up to that point, as quick as we were bringing money in, we were paying it out. And there were a number of very innovative and interesting solutions that allowed us to go ahead and continue the system for a number of years very soundly, and raising millions of people, tens of millions of people, out of poverty by having these important Social Security programs.
Right. So that's, I think, good to point out that Social Security isn't out of the woods yet, but it's not an imminent threat. It's down the road. There's time to come up with some of these solutions. But two, if there is something going on with the tax bills that would have a more immediate effect on Social Security, we can't know that now. It's speculative, but it is true probably that, or at least in the past, it's been true that people have been grandfathered in, or there's been a period of time for new rules to take effect. So even if there are changes in these tax bills, we might have some window of time. Is that right, Kirk?
Yes. I can't comment on the current tax bill that's before Congress, but in the past, when Social Security has made changes, generally we have grandfathered people in. You know, if you're at retirement age and you've counted on particular laws when you're formulating your retirement program, it'd be unfair to change the game that close to when you were getting ready to file for benefits. So generally, we have grandfathered certain groups of people in, generally it's by age, people relatively close to filing for benefits. Or we have gone ahead and said, okay, we're going to make a change, but it's going to be a very gradual change. It might not take effect for one or two or maybe even further years. However, these are all decisions that are made by our Congress and President when looking at these laws and then writing them and then moving them to the Social Security Administration to administrate them. So, and you also pointed out that, yes, the sooner we make adjustments to the long-range health of the program, the smaller those adjustments need to be. The longer you wait, the more drastic you need to make the changes in order to keep the program solvent.
Okay. So my goal for the show is that we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about retirement in the next segment, and then some on disability, which is really complex and interesting and important to a lot of people. And finally, some Medicare toward the end. I'd like to throw out our numbers for our listeners. If you've got questions, 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if you've just tuned in, we're listening to Kirk Larson, who's calling us from Seattle. He is, I guess you could say, Alaska and Washington State are his territory for Social Security. He's worked 25 years for this agency and has a lot of insight and information to share. Kirk, as we kind of move through the show, could you kind of sort of zero in on Alaska's numbers here a little bit and let us know what Alaskans are using these programs, retirement, disability, so we have a sense of our sort of neighbors that are using these programs.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said earlier, you know, we have about 60 million people in the country receiving benefits. But when you look right down at Alaska, there are a lot of people in those communities that use the benefits as well. Today, we have about 95,000 people in Alaska that receive benefits from one of our programs. We have about 65,000 people that are retired workers that receive benefits, about 12,500 people that receive benefits from our disability program, and we have a number of widows and spouses and children that receive benefits. For example, we have about 9,000 children in Alaska that receive Social Security benefits. Generally, that means that one of their parents has reached retirement age, has become disabled, or has passed away. And if you're a parent that's happened to you, and you have a minor child or a disabled child, those are children that can get benefits on your record. So it's very important to remember, and what does that represent? That represents to the Alaska economic situation, that's a huge impact. On a month-to-month basis for the people receiving Social Security benefits, they pump in about $114 million a month in Social Security monies. You know, so that's well over $1 billion a year that comes from people receiving Social Security benefits in the state of Alaska. And I always like to say with those benefits, those aren't money that people put away in a savings account. This is money that's being used for day-to-day needs. It's paying for food. It's paying for shelter. It's being used in the communities that the money is going into.
Right. Well, that's really helpful. It makes it real to the Alaskans. You know exactly how many people are getting benefits from this. Now I'd kind of like to drill down a little bit. Let's talk about retirement. That's a big. What did you say? 65,000 Alaskans are benefiting from Social Security retirement at this point.
Exactly, and probably about 96% of people in Alaska pay in to Social Security.
Okay, so let's talk about. I actually wanted to talk about the My Social Security, which is an easy way for anybody to sort of get on the radar screen of Social Security. And I guess it's you know, when you think of an agency as big as Social Security and as sweeping, how do you communicate with them, right? And so let's talk a little bit about My Social Security, because that's kind of the portal that has been created for users to start communicating with Social Security.
Exactly. Very important. The My Social Security account is the kind of the foundational point that if you want to understand your benefits, if you're not receiving Social Security benefits yet, and you want to understand what you're going to get from retirement, or what you'd get if you became disabled, or what your family could get if you passed away, or if you want to review your work history year by year, which I always recommend people do, you want to be sure that you're getting credit for all the work you've done. And sometimes companies do make errors, and they either don't report enough money that you earn from them or they don't report at all. You definitely want to review your Social Security work record, which you can do when you open up a My Social Security account. So to open a My Social Security account, you just go to our website, and right on the front page, there's a link that says My Social Security. You go there, and it'll ask you some questions. To verify who you are, we do take very seriously the protection of your personal information. So that'll let you open up the account, and then you can see what your future benefits are going to be. You can look at your work record year by year, make sure you got credit for all the benefits you did. But also, if you're on benefits, a number of other things you can do. If you're already getting benefits, you can use this portal to get a replacement Medicare card. If you've lost your card or you need a replacement card, you can use this portal to order a card. You don't have to go into an office or call us. If you need to change your address, change your phone number, change your direct deposit, you can do that right online by having this account. If you need to get replacement tax documents, if you need to print up a benefit verification letter to confirm how much you're getting from Social Security because you're applying for a program or you need to get a loan, you can do that right online. You don't have to go in. You don't have to wait. You can get that printed up whenever you need it. So very important, whether you're getting benefits or not getting benefits, having access to this account and knowing what your benefits are going to be, it's all right there at your fingertips.
And we've got a link to that on alaskapublic.org, but I'm sure if you Googled My Social Security, you'd probably come right up with it. Back to retirement, I think one of the biggest questions and one of the biggest discussions I hear people having is whether to retire at 62, which is kind of considered early, or hold off to your real retirement age versus you can decide to apply for Social Security at 70. So I think people often think about, well, what's the best decision for me to make? What can you offer them as ways of thinking about this?
Well, I'll go over the range of what happens, and the dollar amount of your payment changes based on when you're going to file for your benefit. And it just doesn't change year to year. It changes month to month as you look at that. So I'll use a really simple example. Right now, for people born between 1943 and 1954, you get 100% of your payment if you wait and file at age 66. So you get 100% at age 66. Then we're slowly moving that up. For people born 1955, to get 100% of your benefit, you have to wait till age 66 and 2 months. Someone born in 1956, it's age 66 and 4 months, and then we slowly move that up. And then for people born 1960 or later, you don't get 100% unless you wait and file at age 67. Now then, all those people can retire early. However, and here's the secret about determining what will happen to your payment if you file early. For every single month you file before your full retirement age, your benefits are basically reduced by about 0.5% per month that you file early. So if you had a person that could get $1,000 at age 66, and that was their full retirement age, the age at which they could get 100% of their payment was age 66, if they filed early at age 62, the good news is they're going to get 48 extra checks because they're filing 48 extra months early. The bad news is they're going to take about a 25% cut, so about 0.5% for each month that they filed early. So their check's now going to go from $1,000 down to $750. So that person has to make a choice. Does it make sense to take that large of a reduction in their benefits? And for many people, it doesn't make sense. And the reason is that we as a people are living much longer than we used to. In fact, the average life expectancy for a 65-year-old person, since we started the program in 1940, the average life expectancy for that 65-year-old person has almost doubled since 1940. So starting your benefits early is generally, for the average person, not the best idea. But individual choices for individual people. So each and every month you file early, your benefits are reduced by 0.5%.
Okay. And let me ask you this. If someone retires at their decides that they don't have to retire at their full retirement age, so say 66 or later 67, could they change their mind and do it at 68 or 69, or do they have to wait till they're 70?
And here's the good thing. The answer is yes. As a matter of fact, every single month you wait past your full retirement age, and you don't have to wait till your birthday. You can do it at age 66 and 3 months or age 67 and 8 months, whatever it might be. For every month you wait past your full retirement age, we give you a bonus credit. And that bonus credit is worth 2/3 of 1%, or 8% a year. So if you did wait a year, you'd get automatically, whether you're working or not, automatically you'd get an 8% increase for the rest of your life. So if you could have gotten 100%, $1,000, at age 66, and you waited till age 67, automatically you'd get an 8% increase. You'd get $1,080 a month for the rest of your life. If that person waited all the way till age 70, and that's where we stop paying the bonus credits, they would get 132% of their benefit for the rest of their life. They'd go from $1,000 to $1,320. So, yes, each and every month you wait past your full retirement age, you get that bonus credit, and it can make a huge difference in what your personal payment's going to be. And the other interesting thing is once you pass away, your surviving spouse can file on your record and get your benefit along with all those bonus credits.
So I've got another question, which I think is a typical one. Can you be drawing Social Security and work, or what are the limitations for that?
There are some work restrictions, and I do want to emphasize this. This is work. So if you're going to file for your benefits early, you're 62 or 63 or 64 or 65, and you're filing for your benefits early, you are restricted on how much you can make from wages and self-employment. Now then, we don't care about VA benefits, unemployment, deferred compensation, most pensions, money, royalties from that book you wrote, rental property income. We don't care about any of that. We do care if you're getting wages or self-employment. The current limit, and it's going up a little bit next year, the current limit is $16,920. So if you filed for benefits, and let's say it was January, you filed for benefits and you said, hey, I'm going to make $16,000 this year from wages, no problem. You could file, get all 12 of your payments, and make the $16,000. However, for every $2 you went over the $16,920, For every $2 you go over that, you would lose $1 from your Social Security payment. So if you filed for benefits and you said, hey, I'm going to make about, let's say, $20,000 in the year, well, you'd be about $3,000 over. $3,000 divided by two, that's $1,500. We would say you can go ahead and file. We're just not going to be able to give you all 12 of your payments. We have to hold $1,500 out of your Social Security payment.
Okay, that's good to know. go ahead.
Now, when you reach your full retirement age, there's no limit. So once you reach whatever your full retirement age is, you can make as much money as you want and get all 12 of your payments.
So you could be 70 and just working up a storm.
Well, at whatever your full retirement age is, you could be 66.
Okay.
And you're at your full retirement age, you could make $1 million, and we'll give you all 12 of your payments.
Okay. Well, Kirk, we've got a caller on the line with a retirement question. I'd like to welcome Caroline to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, thank you very much. And to the gentleman there, congratulations on being able to hold all those numbers in your head. My goodness. I retired some time ago because I started working outside the home when I was 13, so I do fairly well with Social Security. A couple of three things. Number one, I remember when the economic crash happened, I had a friend or two who lost half of their 401k. And many companies don't have any kind of retirement or those kinds of benefits. And one thing I understood from, and you can answer this from some years ago, a couple of things. Number one, that if you earned over $115,000 a year, I think it was, now I believe it's up to $190,000, you don't pay any Social Security on anything over that limit. And I was wondering if the people are still able to collect at that high level, if that was true that they were able to collect, and can the feds dip into the Social Security funds? I thought that they were able to treat it kind of like a slush fund. And the pro-tax people seem to be saying that there will be no impact on people in the Social Security system. Now, that makes it feel like to me that those that are not in the system now might have some major restrictions because there's not going to be any money. And Kathleen, you mentioned this at the top of the show, and I think that that's really something people should be concerned about because they've paid into this all these years.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get some of those questions answered. The first one was, I think that Social Security is only collected on the first $128,000 of salary. Above that, it is not collected. Is that correct, Kirk?
That's correct. The current ceiling right now is if you're working and you make about $128,000, once again, it's going up a little bit next year. So if you make about $128,000, they stop taking the 6.2% out of your paycheck, and your employer stops paying in the 6.2% as well. So that is the current law. Now, then, that there has been proposals before Congress, nothing voted on, nothing adopted, but that is one of the solutions to help correct the solvency issue for Social Security, is to remove the cap, and no matter how much you make from wages or self-employment, to take that 6.2% out of your paycheck. There's also been a number of proposals that, you know, there would be a break, and then after you make $250,000, they would start taking that out again, you know, different things like that. So that is a proposal out there to bring more money in, is to remove that cap. However, in and of itself, even if you did that, that would not solve the problem. That would help. That would give us a good chunk of extra money, but it wouldn't solve the problem of fully funding the system. So the current limit, based on the current law, is about $128,000.
And just to wrap up with one more question from Caroline, we talked about people close to retirement being grandfathered in, but what about millennials and all those that still have a long work life ahead of them? What are your thoughts on that, the impact for them?
Well, right now, under the Social Security law, and that's all I can comment on is on the current law, they're beyond moving up the retirement age to age 67. There is nothing on the books that addresses later generations. So that's the way it currently sits right now. Now then, could something be changed in the law? Absolutely. In order to make sure the system stays solvent, they could change the law in the future. They could move the retirement age up further. But once again, that's nothing that's been voted on by Congress. The current law just moves the retirement age to age 67. Beyond that, it does not make any changes. She also had one other comment that Congress has used the Social Security Trust Fund as a slush fund. That's more of a myth than reality. Social Security, like I said, created the Social Security Trust Fund, and in that we have $2.9 trillion saved up. That's simply an investment by us. We've bought bonds, which have interest rates, and we collect those bonds back, and we use that money to fund the system. So we have loaned the money to the United States government, but it's not a slush fund. The concept that the government simply sees that money and uses it for whatever it feels like is more of a myth than reality. Now then, after the Social Security loans the money to the United States government, what they do with the money is out of our control. And some people have felt that the way the United States government has used that money, the money it's borrowed, just not from us, but from people and countries all over the world, that they have not used it wisely. That is a separate issue that Social Security does not address.
Okay, Kirk, we need to take a little break here. We're on the line with Kirk Larson, Social Security public affairs person, answering questions on retirement, and coming up next, some on disability. When we come back from the break, we're going to hear from Ann Hillman of Alaska Public Media, who's preparing a whole series of stories related to seniors in Alaska. So we'll be right back. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and as I promised before the break, we're going to hear a little something from Ann Hillman. I'm going to introduce her segment with this. In the 1970s and early 80s, people flooded Alaska looking for work in the oil industry. Now, 40 years later, many are still here. Instead of fleeing to warmer weather, Alaskans are aging in Alaska. For the past 7 years, we've had the fastest growing senior population in the country. But with age comes a different set of needs. Can our state handle it? Ann Hillman from Alaska Public Media Solutions Desk has this story.
Hi, Gay.
How you doing, Tom?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Tom Russell sits at a lunch table in the Wasilla Senior Center, chuckling about an old hunting memory, when his friends settle in across from him.
If it wasn't for my good friends like these ladies, I wouldn't stick around.
You wouldn't?
Oh.
Russell doesn't mean he would leave Alaska. That's preposterous. He means he would just check out other senior centers in the area. For Russell, Alaska is home. He moved up nearly 40 years ago, and he's here for the long haul.
There's no other place to fish in Alaska, but don't tell anybody that. I don't want him to catch my fish.
As we talk, he pulls out photos of his son and fish they caught together last summer. He spends a lot of time in his boat with family members, though now his son drives instead of him. Russell's slowing down some, but not much. He still lives alone and looks out for himself.
Oh, let's see. I'm 78 right now. Just a youngster.
Like many people in Alaska, Russell is staying in his house as long as he can. And here, that's actually more feasible than elsewhere in the country.
Alaska's like the trendsetter.
That's Elizabeth Ripley, the CEO of Matsu Health Foundation, which focuses partly on healthy aging. She says Alaska has prioritized developing home and community-based services, like in-home healthcare, chore services, and meal programs. It lets people live independently longer.
All the other states wish they were in our spot because more people want to live in, you know, stay in their homes and stay in their communities than live in an institution. And it's usually more cost effective, and it's usually more provides greater quality of life and better outcomes for older adults.
But that doesn't mean older people can get all of their needs met right away. In the Matsu Valley, the population of people who are 65 and older is growing quickly, but funding for services isn't. There's a shortage of primary care providers who take Medicare, transportation options are lacking, waiting lists for housing can range from 6 to 18 months. Similar problems exist statewide. Derek Pennington is the program director for the Aging and Disability Resource Center in Wasilla. He says people who have an emergency are often left in a bind.
So if something happens and you need the service now, it generally is not available.
He says there are no easy solutions for these issues, and organizations need to start collaborating now to fill in the gaps.
We kind of get to choose how we're going to pay. Either we can pay for transportation and housing and fighting social isolation, or we're going to all pay with higher Medicaid bills and more assisted living and all these other costs associated with that.
Some of the services that are already in place do seem to be working for those who can access them. Back at the senior center, Russell's friend Gay Scott says aging in Alaska has been easy. Her family helped her when she lived alone, and now she's in senior center housing.
Well, I love my apartment because I'm on the top floor and I've got a beautiful view. People, we must have the best building, and the people on that top floor they're wonderful.
They get together for Bible study sessions and ice cream socials. They can go to the community center to work out and eat lunch. She has a good social circle. No one she knows has considered leaving the state. For Scott,
getting old is fun.
For the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
And that was Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman. For the next few weeks, she'll be exploring things that make aging fun and feasible in Alaska. You can find those stories at alaskapublic.org/solutions or by subscribing to the Solutions Desk wherever podcasts are found. So that was really fun to drop that in here. If you've just joined us, this is Hometown Alaska, and we are talking with Kirk Larson of the Social Security Administration. We have spent the first part of the hour kind of getting an overview of Social Security. Then we kind of drilled down into retirement. I've got two quick questions. We've got some email coming in, and I'd like to take a call from Bill. Hi, Bill. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Yeah, hey, good show. Anyway, I'm 65, worked here for 40 years, retired, and somebody from New York the other day, a friend of mine, said, why are you staying here? I said, because it's kind of affordable. Kurt, if that's your name, you work for Social Security. Every interaction I've ever had with Social Security has been good. If it were retail, I'd give it a 5-star deal. Okay, so anybody listening, if you have questions for Social Security, in my experience, you get answered immediately. And there's not this feeling that you get sometimes when you collect unemployment. I would get this feeling from time to time that, hey, you don't deserve this money. You should go get a job. I've never had that there. So Social Security is successful. My question is, my employer just gave me a health care reimbursement lump sum. Can I set up a health care savings account and pay my insurance through my Medicare Part B, A and B, or Part B, through a health care savings account? Is that possible to set that up?
Typically, with a health savings account, if you have Medicare Part A, from what I understand, and this is a separate Medicare question, if you have Medicare Part A, you're not eligible for the health care savings account because that gives you certain tax benefits. So if you have Medicare, generally, and your employer offers that, generally you would not be able to sign up for it. Check with your employer to confirm that, but generally you're not eligible for that because of the tax incentives, and if you have Medicare Part A, it precludes you from opening that account with your employer.
Even though my check, my payment for Medicare comes out of my Social Security check?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That's all I had for today. Good show.
Thanks a lot, Bill. And I've got an email from Russell who says he reviewed his work history and discovered that Social Security made an error in a 1992 work history. And he's received full credit for Medicare wages, but the Social Security amount was keyed in incorrectly. He says he sent in his tax returns and Social Security to correct the issue, but so far no response. So, Kirk, I know you can't comment on individual cases, but is there any insight you have to offer in this case?
Yes. If you discover an error on your Social Security statement, you look at your work history, you're looking down it, and you say, hey, here's a year. Maybe it's zero. Maybe it's shorted a certain amount. In actuality, the document we need to see is not the tax return, because the tax return does not show how much you made. You record on your tax return how much you made, but it's not the primary document that we need to see. We actually need to see your W-2 form from your employer. So if you don't have the W-2 form, you can go back to the employer and request a replacement W-2 form. That's why it's better to try to catch this sooner rather than later, because sometimes employers go out of business. And then it starts to get very hard to get that information, because that is the primary document that shows work, not a tax return, unless you have your tax return because you were self-employed and you are filing self-employment, which then you're the employer and you're responsible for doing all of that. And in that case, we do need to see your tax return and the proof that you actually paid your taxes. We need to see canceled checks to show that you actually paid the IRS those taxes that might have been due. But generally, we would need to see that W-2 form. Yes, you can go ahead and take it into your local Social Security office, or you can call our 800 number, which is open from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. You can call the 800 number and tell them that there's a situation, you need to have it corrected, and they'll tell you where you can mail that document to. I would send it certified mail so you can get a signature confirmation that it was received. And then typically it will take probably about 6 to 9 months before they make that correction. Now then, if you're on benefits and they do make that correction and it increases your record, we will give you all the back money that you were due in those situations.
Okay, thanks a lot for tackling that. I've got one other email for you, Kirk. It comes from Tom. He says he was listening to the show and he noted that Social Security tax tops out at about $128,000. We talked about that. Up to that amount, you're paying 6.2% into Social Security and your employer is paying 6.2%. But above that, $128,000 or maybe a little higher next year, taxes are not taken out. And he is really suggesting that we could fix this whole problem, or how much would it take to fix this problem if we started taxing salaries above $128,000?
If you tax salaries above $128,000, in and of itself, it does not solve the problem. From what I understand, it gets us a good chunk of the way there. But it doesn't even get us 50% of the way there to solving the problem. But it does bring in a lot of money to solve the problem. But that is not the silver bullet that we would need. To fix the system, there's probably going to be a number of small solutions. That was what we did back in the early 1980s to fix the system. There wasn't one magic thing that we did. There were a number of small incremental changes that we made. This would be a good step to solving the problem. Once again, it is something that Congress has looked at. It has been proposed before Congress, and people have looked at it as probably one of the more likely solutions to take place. But in and of itself does not solve the problem.
Right. Great. I'm glad we touched on that again. I'd like to welcome another caller on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, John.
Hello. I wanted to repeat the gentleman's comments about Social Security. Fantastic. Medicare is also a fantastic system as well. It's incredibly well run, and the people are is fantastic to interact with, so fun to say that. But I did want to ask the question of how we as users of Social Security and can be involved in helping to improve the actual program and make sure that the benefits go on to the next few generations if possible. Thank you.
Okay, Kirk, how can people get involved?
The best way to get involved is to talk to your congressman, your senator, your president, and encourage them to come up with a solution to meet this challenge. Simply doing nothing or not changing the program is not going to solve it. We've seen this situation coming for a number of years, and we know that we do need to make some sort of adjustments to the program. What those adjustments are going to be, it's hard to say. But, you know, this isn't the time to panic either. We do have a little bit of time to do this. Of course, the sooner we make the decisions, the less drastic they need to be. But we do need to come up with some sound solutions to meet this challenge, just not fixing it for the next 20, 30, 40 years, but solving the problem through the end of the century. Like I said, this is a very important program. As a matter of fact, one out of every three seniors in this country depend on Social Security for over 90% of their retirement income. So one out of three of your neighbors that are on Social Security, this is all they have in retirement. Now, then some people will say it shouldn't have been that way. Social Security was never intended to be a standalone program. But for some people, that's the reality, is that they depend on Social Security for almost all of their retirement income. And this program, without it, millions and millions of our fellow citizens would be living deep in poverty. So this is a very important program, and whatever we can do as the American people to make sure that it stays solvent is very important.
Okay. Well, listen, we were supposed to be in the middle of discussing disability, which is another big chunk of Social Security. I'm just going to throw out our number one more time, 550-8433, or email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. But Kirk, what do you say we dive into disability just a little bit? It's important. I think you said something like 13,000 Alaskans are taking advantage of that.
Actually, about 12,532.
So one of the questions that I heard immediately when I went out into the community and tried to talk to folks about disability is that the application process is complex, and that many social service agencies end up trying to help clients apply for disability through Social Security. And so I know from you and I discussing it, you know it's a complex process. What is Social Security doing to try to help make it easier for people who are applying for disability?
Well, one of the big things that we've done and we continue to work on is we've now put the application online. And today, close to 50% of all people filing for disability benefits now file for benefits right online. And the reason I really like the online application is it does simplify the process. The questions are very clear. We've designed them to try to be as clear as possible. And the really nice thing about this is you can take your time to fill out that application. If you need to take a day, 2 days, a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, to complete that application, you can do it at your pace. So if you get into the application, you don't understand a question, you need further clarification, there's information right online that you can click on and get a clarification on the question, or you can call our 800 number, or you can try filling out the application as best you can, and then since it's an online application, you can ask a friend, a relative, a caseworker, to go ahead and review your application. Since it's online, anybody in the country, if you have a friend back in New York, you can ask them to go ahead and look at your application and make sure that it's been filled out properly or completely. So online gives you much more time to fill it out, and it allows other people to be able to look at it. And if you do need that assistance, you can call our 800 number and get a clarification on a question. Now then, I like to remind people, it's a tool to collect information. Medical situations are very complex as it is. So often gathering that information, and that's all this tool is doing, is just simply gathering information. But people's medical situations can be very complex, and trying to verbalize that and then get it down on paper can be very difficult for many people and can be often overwhelming. So I encourage people out there that if you have a friend or a relative that's filing for disability benefits, try helping them with it. Try sitting down and just working through them with it. It's not necessarily filling it out for them, but kind of be a sounding board as they put that together. That's probably one of the best things I can recommend people helping someone.
Okay. Kirk, we are getting callers in, and I'm going to jump in and get a few of them answered. We're still lingering in the retirement area. I'd like to welcome Terry onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I have a question for you. I'm a state of Alaska retiree, and I have a very small pension, and so I still work. I plan to work until I'm 70. I am a boomer, but I'm planning to work until 70 to get that bump in benefits. Before I went to work for the state of Alaska, I had over 40 quarters of full-time work in with paying into Social Security, and since I retired from the state, I've worked for 10 years, but part-time. So during that time, I have another 40 quarters in. But when I started looking into Social Security benefits, I discovered woefully that I'm not going to be able to collect anywhere near what I normally would have been eligible for had I not had my small pension. So my question for you is twofold. Number one, the job that I'm currently working part-time that I'm paying into Social Security, am I allowed to exempt from paying Social Security in that I'll never be able to draw it and or the portion that I'm allowed? And then number two, do you know of any changes coming down the pike that would give relief for us pensioners who are not making a lot of money on a pension?
Let's give Kirk a chance to answer that. We've got other callers too. Go ahead, Kirk.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty complex question. There are some government employees, most firefighters, most police officers, a number of different other government employees that work for state and local governments that don't pay into Social Security. If you're in one of those situations and you don't pay into Social Security and you ultimately begin to collect a government pension that you earned while you didn't pay Social Security taxes on your wages, and you're going to collect Social Security benefits, your Social Security benefits will be lowered by as much as 50%. That is one disadvantage for people in that situation that look at their standard form that they can get online. The computer doesn't understand that you're going to be getting this government pension, and it'll give you a higher number until you tell the computer this person's actually going to get what we call a non-covered government pension. So two things there. Yes, you are correct. By receiving this non-covered government pension, a pension you earned and you did not pay Social Security taxes on your wages, it will generally lower your Social Security benefit. If you want to learn more about this, you can go to our website and look up the windfall elimination provision, and it will give you some details on that. So yes, it will reduce that. Your two questions, though, can you voluntarily stop paying into Social Security at your current job? The answer is no. If you're paying into Social Security and your job, that's what they normally collect is from all other employees, you cannot voluntarily say, I want to stop paying into it. The second question, is there any relief coming to this situation? This was a law passed in 1986. It affects a number of government employees, and the general answer is no. There is nothing before Congress that would adjust this particular law.
All right. Gosh, Kirk, I think you can probably hear the music. That means we are out of time. I thank the people who called. I want to thank Kirk Larson, especially from the Social Security Administration. Perhaps we should have you back, Kirk.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to thank our callers and our listeners. Charles Woolforth will be back as your host on the next Hometown Alaska when he interviews local musicians Michael Howard and Kevin Worrell on taking Alaska music to the world outside. They plan on some live music in the studio. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.